is. Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. It's a good decision, and I hope it's a decision you'll make night after night and keep coming back. In the news, some interesting, almost comical stuff, and I've just got to share this with you. I receive each day emails from you, and there's always some of those emails containing links that people would like for me to take a look at, and so I do. And in one of these links was this story. I can't read the whole thing, you know, copyright issues and everything, but let me read you the headline here. World Bombshell Exclusive. Huh. And then it goes on and says, NASA finds 40-year-old missing moon landing tapes in Perth, Australia. I had to laugh. World Bombshell Exclusive. We reported on that over a year ago. That is not new news. But anyway, the article goes on and says, the Sunday Express can now reveal that the missing tapes containing the original high-quality images have been found. If the visual data can be retrieved, NASA is set to reveal them to the world as a key plank of celebrations to mark the 40th anniversary of the landings, moon landings, next month. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I even mentioned that in passing in last night's show. Now, that hit the news today. It was published Wednesday, July the 1st, 2009. And a little over a year ago, when they found those tapes, I reported on it. We talked about it. And we even talked about how there were some people who had taken home equipment that NASA was just going to throw away, and they stored it in a garage. And that's the equipment that has to be used to see these tapes. And I talked about that a little bit last night. Well, there you go. It's a world bombshell exclusive. You guys over at the Daily Express need to tune into the Kevin Smith Show and be a little bit more up to date. You're about a year late on that. Oh, my goodness. Okay, now, this weekend, of course, is Saturday, is July the 4th, and that means, is that correct? Let's see. Yeah, that's right, July the 4th. And that means it's a big holiday here in the United States. July the 4th is when we celebrate the birth of our nation. Big holiday, and so a lot of people are going to be attending parties, barbecues, spending time with friends, going out on Saturday night to see the fireworks shows around the country and so forth. It's going to be a big day. But it's also going to be a big day because of the fact that it's the first Saturday of the month. And that means that I will be in our chat room. And for those of you who are members of the Kevin Smith Show members area, join us in the chat room. We always have a good time in there. All right, we'll be back with my guest, Freighter SH, right after this break, so don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Freighter SH, and I may not be pronouncing the name correctly. He is the author of a book called the Gnosis Gate book, in which he delves into information from the mystery schools, the mystery societies, and he takes the view that this information is insightful and helpful for those who know it. He's also the host of his own talk show. Freighter, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Greetings, Kevin.
Am I saying the name correctly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And, of course, it, I believe, in Latin means brother.
Yep.
Okay. Now, let me start with what might sort of seem to you to be an unusual question, but it's just something I've always wondered about, Freighter, and that is this. As you might imagine, I converse with people in the genre of the mysterious on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've discovered over the past 9 years of doing this show is that there are a lot of people in the world of the mysterious that use pseudonyms, as do you. And I'm just curious as to why you think that might be.
Well, it kind of creates like a safety barrier, you know, like from the public. Like the old mystery schools, like the Masons and OTO and our groups like that, see, like, before politicians used to join these groups, they used to be about keeping the wisdom within. But then when the politicians started to join, you know, it started to become more corrupt. But back in the old days, it was the whole idea that everyone was a brother. You know, I mean, so that was the whole idea of creating kind of an identity for yourself within these lodges.
Okay, so it's a little bit of protection from public intrusion, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. And you see, and it's not just the so-called mystery schools that do this. You find, for instance, a pope. When he's a priest, he may be using his real name, but when he becomes pope, he takes a different name.
Yeah.
And then you also have nuns. When they join a convent, they become, you know, it may be Susan Chang, and she becomes Sister Mary Catherine.
Exactly. Also, Benedictine monks do that, too. They'll usually take one of the names of the apostles, you know, like you might have, like, Luke, Timothy, that's a professor. But they do that, you know. Pretty much found anywhere in the old religions. I'm sure even the Orthodox Church has it too.
Yes, of course they do. Now, your book is called the Gnosis Gate Book, and mm-hmm. Gnosis is a Koine Greek word that in English means knowledge. Now, the ancient Greeks were renowned for their mystery schools, the ancient mystery schools. But they weren't the only civilization to have these mystery schools. In your book, you talk about information from these mystery societies. So tell us a little bit about the Gnosis Gate. What is this book about?
Well, basically, it updates it, too. You know, it's like, first thing you need to do is you need to teach a person about psychology and philosophy and wisdom. You really can't go anywhere until you first do that, the simple stuff. you know, because so, if someone has a bad background and they get this, you know, they need to heal first. And there's a lot of methods. I even found a machine known as a mind modulation machine. There's a Proteus Sirius machine, and you can use that to, it uses binaural beats, and that can help heal. I actually find it heals the brain, like kind of like, you know, using some kind of muscle stimulus, you know, like in a gym or something. Then once they're healed, then they can start moving forward to learning different psychic skills. Like they just work their way up. And then they even learn remote viewing, which is a military skill. And that's the one new thing that's at the old days. It would have probably been under some kind of ritual magic, where nowadays, you know, with the military, they figured a way of doing it without having to do any of that stuff. Then he got into the secrets of the world.
The device that you talked about, Dr. Nick Begich has talked about quite a bit as well. And what it is a brain entrainment device. And now, this brings up something that I think really plays into what we talk about a lot here on this show. We talk about anything that's strange and unexplained, and I have said many times that what I view as being paranormal, or the definition of paranormal, is simply something for which we have no scientific explanation. It exists. We don't understand how it exists, but there it is. And then a lot of the mystery school stuff, it has been my understanding. Now, you correct me on this if I'm wrong, but it's been my understanding that a lot of the rites and ceremonies attendant with the mystery societies served the function, in many cases, served the same function as this brain entrainment device. The purpose was to get the brain at a certain level and to get the thought process focused. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems to me that a lot of the rites of the mystery schools, mystery societies, a lot of them seem to be focused on that. It seems to be the purpose. What would you say about that?
With rituals, usually what I've come to learn and understand is, well, it's like basically in two parts. Sometimes they're telling a story, like initiation, you know, and a ceremony. But then there's another thing, too, I have to say, is that it's throwing your consciousness a bone. Basically, the whole idea is before you can start being perceptive to these, like, psychic astral skills, that you have to throw your rationing, you know, to a side. And it was found that those rituals can help.
All right, now let's talk about specifically, what are we talking about when we're talking about the mystery societies, and what are we talking about when we're talking about the skills that you've alluded to?
It deals with preservation of old school knowledge, because as times change, you know, like especially if, you know, like for example, I'm a student of the medieval age, I study a lot of that, we could have lost so much, you know, but we were lucky some parts of the world actually, you know, stored away the old, you know, Greek wisdoms and Socrates and stuff. But I think that initially, like I said before, politicians came in to use that to their advantage, that was the whole idea to preserve the old knowledge. And I think,
but what are we talking about when you say the old knowledge? What is that? What is in it?
It could be anything. It could be our origins. It could be there's a lot of symbolism involved. Like about God, there is like for example of God, it is in Hebrew it means Elohim, and Elohim, but for example, if you take the word El in the old Canaanite Phoenician, it used to mean deity. Then if you add Ohim, it's a pluralization of that word, which could mean deities. So over time, they kind of hid those kind of things from the general public, because the general public didn't have the education skills until much later on, until they allowed them to, you know, learn more things.
Well, of course, you're exactly right with El and Elohim. You're exactly right. Elohim means gods, plural, and El means God. And was there a concerted effort to hide that fact? Not only was there, it is still going on. I would venture a guess that in 100% of the English translations of the book of Genesis in the Bible, 100% of those translations, regardless of whether we're talking about the King James or the New American Standard, the Revised Standard Version, the New International Version, whatever we're talking about, it all, if you look at Genesis chapter 1, it is all translated as God. 31 verses and 32 times they translate it as God, singular. And it is most definitely not singular. It is gods, plural, 32 times. And you're exactly right. Now, that fact that it is purposely mistranslated in all these English versions of the Bible, and it is definitely mistranslated.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the question I have about that for you is, why do you think this is still going on?
I think they feared that the public would, you know, because, you know, the public has been kind of trained, you know, that, you know, if the church were to just go out forward like that, you know, and say that, you know, they would say, well, the Antichrist is here, you know, and then everyone would go crazy.
Well, the Antichrist is here. I get email telling me that that's me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm here. According to some people, that's what I am, because I refuse to lie about this.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not anti-Bible, and the thing is this. It says what it says, and I have wondered, and I have spoken about it many times. What's the deal? I mean, you know, there's not going to be more miscarriages in the world. There's not going to be more wars in the world. There's not going to be more rain or more drought if people know the truth.
Yeah. And one thing that's very fascinating is how the Vatican actually does now accept UFOs. They do accept that now. You know, I mean, they don't go publicly too much with that. You know, they don't talk about it every week, but they've come to accept its existence, you know. Of course, I think they probably had knowledge about that for a long time, but, you know. We're seeing UFOs now on a daily basis. You know, even our media can't hide that anymore.
All right. So what is in the Gnosis Gate? I mean, what's in there that's going to be interesting to me, useful to me, or make me angry?
Well, I do have some very interesting information about the afterlife, based on very, very extreme near-death experiences. And to me, the best ones to go by are the ones where people were declared dead for the longest, because they seem to have an even more vivid experience. And what happens is that when the individual is declared dead, and then what happens is they leave their body like an extreme out-of-body experience, they will see everything going on out there. They'll even see their body, but as the nervous system, or should I say the last of the nervous system, dies out, as this happens, the subject should see a dark tunnel opening up. This tunnel grows as the nervous system dies out. Once they enter the black, they have no body, and it is just the remainder of their consciousness. But the black is probably the most loving experience ever felt, according to these NDE patients. Is totally the opposite. You know, they expect a white light. Then the black is the love of God, or Elohim. It may be possible that, as John Lear said, that this could be a designed highway by the Elohim so that we have a way to go through this whole process of life and death. But back to the tunnel. This tunnel is just filled with warm love, and I hear it is possible for a soul to stay there forever. But it is also a test for if a person panics in this nothingness, it could be considered a hell then. So that could be another theory about why ghosts happen. Maybe that if they fail the test, they end up staying in the earth plane for an extended time until they realize, you know, where they're at.
Well, now you've brought up something about this tunnel that I have not heard, and that is, you know, we always hear that there was this bright light, there was a tunnel, and there was a bright light at this end of the tunnel, and they went towards the light, and that's where they began, as they got into the light, they began to feel this intense love. You're saying it happens in the dark tunnel.
Yeah, and also, if they can pass the test, like if they can realize that, you know, it's time to move on, that they have found that there's a pinpoint of light that starts to appear in this darkness, and then it grows to the point that they can cross over into the next step. But there seems to be a test, you know, that's many of these extreme near-death cases have experienced.
So what is the white light, the bright light that everyone talks about? What is that?
That would definitely be probably the light of all lights, you know, the light of the Elohim, you know, that would lead us to wherever we could consider as heaven or nirvana or, you know, any word you can imagine, Valhalla. You know, I think that's one I'm going to be investigating probably for the rest of my life, you know, because there's so many different theories on that one.
Now, in these near-death experiences that you write about,
mm-hmm.
What is the longest period of time that one of these people has been dead, as far as we're concerned?
I had heard up to 9 minutes. That's a pretty good long time.
Yeah, it is. There are people that get declared dead, get a tag on their toe, and get put into a cooler in a morgue,
yeah,
and then wake up sometime the next day. You know, after hours of this, and I wonder what they have to say about where they've been and what they saw.
Oh, I know. And that's another thing too. You know, you always hear about, like, they'll make it to their destination, but then someone will put their hand out and say, "It's not your time," and then they're like shot back down. And then they're like, that was another case I had heard. I forgot what her name was, but she said she was depressed for months after that, because it was such a bliss to see it, that, you know. So I guess it could be considered kind of a curse too, you know, to see something like that, because, you know, you're not ready yet, you know.
All right, now how does this gnosis gate differ from the information people already have available to them? For instance, in this audience there are a lot of people who are Christians and who read their Bibles, and they would say they have information already available to them about this. There are a lot of people who are Buddhists and they read the writings of Buddha, and they would say they already have this information. There are people who follow Confucius and they would say the same thing. The Muslims would say of the Quran, they've already got the truth, they already know it. We have to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like for you to tell us how this information that you present to us takes us beyond what we've already got. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Frater S.H. Frater, let's get into the question that I asked before we went to break. all over the world, there are many religions. All over the world, people who adhere to those various religions, and who are, you know, at least somewhat active in those religions, have their holy books, and they would say, we've already got information about what's on the other side. How does the Gnosis Gate add to what they have?
Well, as I had mentioned on a show I did before, I had a new method that is in the book of how to deal with violent entities, with spirits. Usually, what happens a lot of times when someone begins to become more sensitive, and now sometimes some people just have something that is haunting them, you know, and they, you know, they're trying to think of should they go to a priest or should they, what should they do? And what you can do is, I'm going to talk about that. That's one thing I got here, is there are people that have all kinds of problems, but there are some that have a problem that could ruin their lives with sheer utter terror, and that is the problem of the violent entity. Some wish to call it a demon. Truth be told, it can't be classified. An example is, let's say you're hit on the nose by the invisible man. You can't see what hit you. How can you classify something you can't see? So, and then also another thing is, a lot of times when you classify it, I've actually noticed it makes it stronger because it's kind of feeding off of your belief system. So a lot of times you don't want to put something on there. But a way magicians and psychics attract these beings by waking their psychic centers or simply screwing around with magic too much, and they do that. a way to get rid of them is, after a while, my story was, after a while of fighting back against these entities, I grew tired of them coming back all the time. Even praying to the angels would help for a bit, but because I was praying outside of myself for help, I was in fact showing an ounce of fear to the entity. It would simply return in time. What I found is, first you must ignore the entity, then here is the finale. You send it a bit of love at it. It destroys it. The love cancels it out. This beast lives off of solid negative energy. That's why, in fact, it enjoys you throwing it around. It wants that. But positive energy, like love, cancels it out. And it will not attack at all. It does work.
So you have had personal experience with these negative entities.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but since I made this method, it's been working, so I can definitely vouch.
Well, tell us about it. What was happening to you?
Well, these events would happen in lucid dreams, usually. Everything you can imagine, getting thrown against the wall, choked, tacked, kicked. I even went back to solid religion, and that helped for a while, but then it comes back, and then all of a sudden I was at work once during break, and I said, the heck of it, it's just my burden, I guess. And all of a sudden, I came up with this whole thing, and it worked.
All right, and so this is in your book, How to Deal with These Negative Entities.
Mm-hmm, yep.
What's the purpose of this book? Why did you write this?
I made it as, originally I wanted to make a mystery school, but then after a while I decided, well, I don't know if I'll do that, but I made the book so someone else could use it. They could use it, you know, as a choice. You know, I'm sure there may be other books out there, but, you know, this one uses a remote viewing and uses a whole mixture of stuff. But this, the first important thing is to definitely know how to handle these things, because they will find you as you start to get more wiser and better at things.
All right, what would you say to someone who would say this? If my developing my psychic abilities, if my development of my consciousness is going to lead me into situations that attracts these negative entities, then why would I want to develop my consciousness and my psychic powers?
I mean, yeah, that's a good question. That is. I mean, that's one of the reasons why in the book I wrote a thing called the Pandora's Box, which kind of, I mean, this is definitely not a road for everybody, but there are certain things, but the fact is I believe that this kind of knowledge should be out there. So if somebody says, well, you know what, I would like to know in my life, you know, what are the secrets and how to remote view. I mean, there are remote viewers in the military who saw, like, Brezhnev's office during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went on tour and they found out, they verified that was right. They had never seen his office before. But the point is that, when I was a teenager, I used to be a fundamental Christian. I know what it's like to be afraid of hell, you know. And it takes time, you know. I know what they're going through.
All right, but it's one thing to tell me you understand and that it's a good question, but what's the answer? If I'm going to actually have to face some negative entities as I develop my psychic abilities, then why should I develop my psychic abilities? Why shouldn't I just live in blissful ignorance?
Well, think about it this way. Then you're following the steps of the prophets. You think about in the New Testament, what do the apostles do once they have met Jesus? They're fighting demons. Demons or violent enemies or whatever they had considered at that time. And that is like a rite of passage. You know, it should be something you strive for, you know. And it doesn't matter what religion you are. You know, I think that's a noble, you know, noble way of life, you know. And another thing, too, to add to that is I did actually bless my own house once. I actually got this pesky ghost once in my house. I was just sitting there, and I had this disembodied voice laugh at me. And instantly what I did, and I can tell you, you know, the Catholic method of exorcism, it's good. I mean, I endorse it all the way. That from my own experience of dealing with ghosts and other entities, the best method is to put on priest-like garbs. Now you can do anything in your anything to just appear like a priest, and this throws the consciousness into a higher realm. You know, like you feel more heroic and you can confront something. Then you perform the LBRP, which is the lesser banishment of the pentagram. And see, what you do there is you're summoning the four great archangels, you know, Michael, Ariel, Gabriel, and Raphael. And that was actually, someone had used that same thing on the Paranormal show on A&E. They had done that before. And then another method you use is I forgot what psalm it is, but there, if you look up on the internet about exorcisms, psalms that exorcists use, take that and then go to each corner of each room with a canister of salt. Now the canister of salt, that's from Native American culture when they deal with ghosts and stuff, and it's been known to throw ghosts right out of the house. And you go to each corner, you say the psalm, you throw the salt in the sign of the cross, and after you're done with the whole ritual, I got rid of the thing. I mean, it worked good.
All right, now, you said that some people call these demons.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said you can't really classify them. Why not?
Well,
they have to be something.
That's true, but that's the problem. It's invisible. the realization I came to was when you classify it, it seems. I mean, there's been all kinds of names for these kind of things. You know, like even the origin of genies. You know, they came from the original demons that came out in the desert. You know, and see, sometimes a name in the old days, in the ancient days, a name is usually considered as powerful. So it's always best to try to take away its power, because these things are not dumb. you know, they're brutal and negative, but they're you can start taking away that power by not naming them. That's the step to getting rid of them.
Well, that would be the exact opposite of the method Jesus used. Which I'm not saying that would be right or wrong. I'm just making an observation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have the story where he confronts a guy that is possessed and speaks to the spirit that's possessing this guy and says, "What is your name?" And so he allows it to use its name.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is don't do that, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, see, the issue with the whole thing with Jesus, too, is, you know, like the Gospels is as close as we get, you know, to the way he lived. You know, that's about as close as it gets. I mean, I don't know about the Gospel of Judas. I don't know about that. You know, it could be plagiarism or something. You never know. But, yeah, I just, it's like I said, you know, that's what worked for me, you know. I mean, if you want to call it a demon, I mean, if that helps for you, I mean, you can do that.
All right, whatever they are, is there any doubt in your mind as to whether they actually exist?
What, demons?
Well, whether they're demons or whatever they are.
Well, I believe, well, the word that's been created is definitely astral. I call them astral entities, you know, and there's all kinds of theories. I mean, there's...
Yeah, but what do you think? Do they actually exist?
Well, yes, obviously, yeah.
Okay, how many people do you think, Frater, have had personal encounters with these negative entities? Just a percentage. What percentage of people would you say have had encounters with them?
Oh, I don't know. It had to be a pretty healthy percentage for it to be as known as it is.
What would you say about this? If not even using a name for this thing takes away some of its power, how about if I don't even buy into the idea that they exist? Wouldn't that take away all of their power?
It could, you know. But, it, like I was saying, you know, like one thing I was saying was is that before I got into this, you know, started working on my chakras and my psychic centers, you know, that's when they began to start to appear. So it is very possible maybe they only feed on people who have higher energies, you know, and I think it's a case-by-case scenario, you know.
Okay, so what about a person who says, "I don't buy into the idea that they exist, I don't buy it at all"? Then they start working on their chakras. Are they going to run into these entities whether or not they believe in them?
As time goes on, usually the chance of running into them does become greater.
All right, we have to get the rest of that answer after this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We were talking, Frater, about whether people who don't even buy into the notion that these beings exist would encounter them anyway if they start working on their chakras and raising their consciousness and so forth. Are these entities going to interfere with them anyway, whether or not the person believes they exist?
Oh, most likely. Oh, yes. And actually, too, I think that what hurt is like they're, you know, they're experimenting and practicing. The big thing too is, you know, I'll say this right to the end.
Yeah, I don't know what has happened, but your phone is breaking up really bad. We can't understand anything you're saying right now.
Okay, let me see. Can you hear me now? Or?
Oh, it's breaking up really bad.
Huh.
Yeah. All right, tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to release the line, and I will call you back. I'll reestablish contact with you immediately. All right?
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, folks, when we open up the phone lines here in just a moment, what I am really interested in from you, and I mean this, I really want to know from you if you think that these negative entities actually exist. Look, all around this world are people of all different stripes and all different beliefs, and some of you think these entities exist. You call them demons. Some of you think they exist. You call them genies or jinn, which, by the way, they are mentioned in both the Quran and in the Bible, the jinn. And some of you call them by other names, and then some of you think they don't exist at all. So when we open the phone lines later, I am really interested in your information about these things. You know, do they actually exist? I will tell you this, Freighter. Are you with us?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I will tell you this. I had Brad Steiger on the show several times, and Brad Steiger said that he didn't believe in them at all until one of them grabbed him by the throat and picked him up off the ground and held him up against a wall, and there were witnesses present. And he said that he became an instant believer in the existence of these things. But, you know, as I said, there are people all over the place who have all different kinds of belief systems. And a lot of the Native American belief systems about what's on the other side, the other side is a general term that I'm using for the non-physical. In a lot of the Native American belief systems, the other side is every bit as real as this side. And a battle on the other side can have consequences that flow into this side. So what do you say about that? Do battles with these entities have consequences that flow into this side?
I do think so, yeah. I mean, like I said, again, I do think that when these things are attacking the certain people that they are, I mean, that's another thing I was going to say about them is that I think that that some of the negative thought, it's also a possibility that some of the negative thoughts of humans may have created these things over our long existence. And so when they do, they go down to attack somebody, you know, they adapt to their belief structure. And so then that person, the methods they use would work.
Well, you know, one of the things that my audience around the world is accustomed to hearing me say, and they don't all agree with this by any stretch of the imagination, no one can ever say that the Kevin Smith Show audience is monolithic. It is a bunch of free-thinking people. And so not everyone agrees with this statement. But one of the things they are accustomed to hearing me say is I don't buy into the idea that we create our own reality. I think that reality is reality. And we create the consequences that flow to us from that reality. For instance, a train is coming down the track, and you truly believe that it's not there. Well, if you step out onto the track, reality will impress itself upon you. And so, you know, we don't create reality, in my point of view. We create the consequences that flow to us from that reality. And so if that's correct, then it's very, very important for us to nail down what is reality, and then what would be the proper or best responses to that reality. Now, if these things actually exist in reality, then it's very important for us to know that it's reality. Why? What is there about it that to you says it is a reality?
Well, you see, my belief is that, see, we're all consciousness, but what it comes down to it is, see, our reality would be a lot like, say, someone going on the internet. We're all experiencing the internet together, but if someone throws a Trojan horse at you, you know, that's very real, and that could cause a great deal of harm to you. And that's so when it comes to these entities, I think that something happened long ago that all of these malevolent thoughts kind of created these astral gremlins, you could say, you know, that, you know, mess with those that begin to start to develop their higher senses.
So our thoughts then are giving birth to entities.
Over the long run, yes.
Well, it would seem to me then that the more people who get their thoughts sort of in tune with what is good and helpful and peaceful, it would seem to me that that would give birth to a whole lot of entities that would combat these other evil entities that we've created with our minds over the years.
Oh, exactly. I mean, there is an idea, another thing too, of older magicians, is the idea of servitors, they call them. And these are like helpers. And the idea is, if the populace were to start to embrace mainly positive emotions, that, you know, that these negative entities wouldn't last too long, because you would end up having positive entities protecting those in the populace from them.
Okay, now, are these positive entities, is that something different and separate and apart from what people call angels?
Oh, that's a good topic. I'm glad we're going that way, because I'll definitely tell you, I believe the angels are independent of all that. I really think they're very real. And another thing, too, is I've actually have meditated to Michael and Gabriel, and they're very real, and like they can protect you. Like Michael's very good to call upon if you need help. Say, like, if you're going to drive to a place and there's going to be bad weather, you can call upon Michael. And people, there have been known that Michael has been able to help these people.
Okay, we've got about a minute here until break. Who or what are the angels?
I believe they work for the Elohim. I believe that that would be most likely the truth about things, or they're just totally independent. That's usually my two theories on that.
One of the things I've said on this show is that whatever they are, if they exist, they are extraterrestrial. They're not from here. What would you say about that? Are they from Earth, or are they from somewhere else?
I think they're interdimensional. They've definitely seen that. But that's another element you've noticed, too, that these Elohim, they seem to, they can go through walls.
We have to take a break. We'll pick up there when we come back, and we'll open up the phone lines. On the other side of this break, what do you think about all of this angels and demons, good spirits and evil spirits? I'd like to know. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We were talking, Frater, about, and by the way, my guest is Frater S.H., author of the Gnosis Gate book. And, Frater, we were talking about this. Are the angels from here? And then who are they? Not just what are they, but who are they? So let me let you pick up there and answer that, and then we'll open up the phone lines. We're going to have to do the re-hookup again. Your phone is absolutely atrocious. We can't understand what you're saying. So I'll give you a call again. We'll be back right after this with Frater, okay? Let's see if we can get him back online. And we will see. Live radio, it's fun. Okay, his line is busy. He hasn't hung up yet, so we'll try him again. Folks, what do you think about all of this? Angels and demons and evil spirits, astral entities, do they actually exist? And why do you think they exist if you think they do? For some reason, we seem to have some problems with Frater's line. We will try to get him back in just a few minutes. But let me go ahead and open up the telephone line for you. The telephone number is 480-553-7232, 480-553-7232. When we talk about things having to do with the paranormal, and we talk about things having to do with UFOs, inevitably, it bumps this subject because there are people all over the internet who have written things about, they say that the occupants of UFOs are demons. We've had people who have come on this show and said that. We've had people who have come on this show and said they are the angels. I've had people on this show who have said they are the Elohim. It's all over the map. But I really would like to know what you think about it, and where you're coming from with that. Now we'll continue to try and get our guest back online. There is apparently something happening with his telephone. I don't know. It's his telephone is off now. So, all right. So let's talk about this. These spirits, whether they're good or evil, they show up in the Bible. They show up in the Quran. In the Quran, they are spoken of as being the jinn, the D-J-I-N, jinn. And you find within the pages of the Bible used both by the Jews and the Christians references to the jinn, the J-I-N. And these are supposed to be the evil spirits, I surmise. And it speaks of them as if they actually exist. The Bible also speaks about demons. But then, so does the Necronomicon. Have you read it? The Necronomicon is supposed to be a collection of ancient spells out of the most ancient magic on earth, out of Assyria. And it is supposed to be a collection of spells whereby you can call up the old gods or the old demons. The Necronomicon is one spell after another after another, and it's supposed to be very, very dangerous. Now, at the time when I bought my copy of the Necronomicon, I bought it at a at an occult bookstore in Dallas, Texas. Now, this occult bookstore kept the Necronomicon under the counter. It was not out on the bookshelves. You had to be over 18 years of age to purchase this book. Now, they also kept the Satanic Bible under the counter. It was not out on the bookshelves. And they said that because of the information, I asked them about it, and they told me that because of the information that was in these books, they feared liability issues if they were to sell these to youngsters, to kids, you know, under the age of 18. And so you had to be at least 18 years of age for them to sell it to you. Well, I qualified, so I bought them. But this all plays into the whole thing about UFOs, USOs, extraterrestrials. This plays into Ed Grimsley's Skywatch, where he's through night vision goggles, he is watching and he is seeing, and thousands of people along with him have seen these UFOs in space and sometimes shooting at each other. And then people, you know, because we don't have all the information, people decide that they are going to come to a conclusion, and they do, and they speculate, and they write things, and those things get out onto the internet, and other people quote them then as though they are gospel. What I would like to know from you tonight is this. I would like to know if, in fact, you think that these evil spirits are a reality. Are angels a reality? And in both cases, what are they? Who are they? Where do they come from? And what are they up to here? Now, the telephone number is on your screen if you're watching KSS-TV. The telephone number is 480-553-7232. 480-553-7232. Interestingly, in the world of the occult, they talk about multiple archangels. Now, the word archangel doesn't mean powerful angel. It means ancient angel. And in the world of the occult, they mention multiple. And depending on who you read, they some will mention that there are a race of these archangels. Others will say that there are four of them. The Bible mentions only one. Only one. And that would be Michael. And anytime if you're reading from the Hebrew scriptures and you read EL on the end of a name, that is the name deity or God. Okay, for instance, Daniel is Daniel. Daniel, and it means God is my judge. So I haven't looked up the meaning of the name Michael, but, you know, it's whatever it is, it's got L at the end of it. And so we're, you know, at that point, we're talking about something to do with God. But there's only one mentioned in the Hebrew scriptures. And so we're sort of left with trying to figure out, I guess, if there's one or multiples. All right, let me see if our guest is back with us. Freighter, are you with me?
Hey, Kevin.
Okay, don't know what happened. We couldn't get you back on the line there for a while.
Yeah.
All right, so what's the deal with that? Now, we've got, you mentioned four archangels. Other traditions among occult traditions mention many more archangels. You mentioned four. The Hebrew Scriptures mentions only one, Michael. So how do you come up with four?
Well, the OBRP that I mentioned, that was based off an old Golden Dawn ritual. But mostly those four are considered the strongest, you know, the most strongest. I guess they.
Now, my question is, what's the source of the information that there are four?
Well, that particular, that was for a particular ritual that in detailed four archangels. Basically, the ritual is basically like a north, south, east, and west type of thing. And
okay, where did they come up with the idea that there are four?
That goes back a long time. I mean, I think it was probably invented that way. I don't know if there's anything really, you know, to add to that, you know.
All right, let's go to the telephone and our caller. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Thanks for having Frater on tonight. Really interesting talk. I do have a question, and I just want to add something to it real quick, and then I'll ask the question. As I got started in working with the energies that I do, being a healer and everything, I have encountered what I just basically call negative entities. Most of my encounters have actually been shadow beings. And I just wanted to ask Frater if any folks that he has talked to have, any folks that he's interviewed, if they've mentioned that they've had any encounters with shadow beings.
Now, what about that, Frater?
I've heard about shadow beings before. I think it's just an intimidation thing that they do because of their dark nature. That's why they come out that way. With some people, they may physically see these things, and I would prescribe probably the same thing, to fire love at it.
Okay, David, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. 480-553-7232 is the number. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message feature if you'd like. You just go to my website and scroll down. You will see a link at the bottom of the page that says flash message, and you can send me a flash message. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Greetings. How are we doing?
Good.
Did you tell me that was 1980 or 1930?
1930.
Okay.
Okay, just what I put in the email.
Okay, yeah, that's what I got. Okay.
All right.
I enjoyed your show last night. I didn't get in to talk to the guy, but it was really amazing. And, you know, this is kind of a follow-up on that. I understand that angels, from what I get from the Bible, what's the one he said there, Gabriel, or no,
Michael,
the one starts with a D. The powerful one, supposedly threw Satan out of heaven.
I think Michael.
Michael, threw, yeah. Yeah. I hear he, you know, like he's in control of, like, the area over Israel, and, you know, and also, I question you, being a recovering Catholic, I believe that, you know, you shouldn't have idols, or, you know, and pray to, nobody, but, Jesus or Elohim himself, or El, And so praying to these angels, wouldn't that be against what God says as far as have no gods before me? And
yeah,
I'll take the rest of it offline.
Okay, thanks for the call. What do you think about that,
yeah.
Freighter?
Yeah, see, angels are messengers. Yeah, I do agree, you know, that you could maybe send them a message, but don't worship them. You know, it's one thing to send a message, but don't love them. But I will tell everyone out here, when you pray to Elohim, you will get wild visions. I mean, I have gotten these wild visions, and sometimes you might get prophecy. There's something about it. I mean, you really are connecting to whatever really helped us start on this planet.
Okay, the telephone number, folks, is 480-553-7232. All over the globe, that number will work. And if you are outside the USA or outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message by going to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Now, we've got one from the United Kingdom that says a demon, this is from Nigel, in the United Kingdom, a demon is an evil entity like what is referred to in Europe. Is Whitley Strieber's ET encounter similar? These things are as real as you and me. So I don't know enough about, I mean, it's been a long time since I read Whitley Strieber's book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got some great books. See, that's another thing to dispute. I mean, that's almost like a whole other show. I mean, is the Elohim the only one out there? You know, there might be rivals, you know. And that just creates so many different variables, it's unbelievable.
Well, Elohim, being plural, is referring, if not to a race of beings or a species, it's at least referring to a tribe. It's referring to a group. And if there, you know, as you say, there may be other groups that are not Elohim and may, in fact, you know, be extraterrestrial, interdimensional beings with a whole lot of power as we would view it. But not Elohim, something other than Elohim. There may be some others. Well, in fact, if you take the Hebrew scriptures, there's two different species of angels. There's cherubim and there's seraphim.
Yeah.
Okay, and they are not Elohim. That's two separate species of what we call angels. Now, there could be others. There could be many others. We're just not told about that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Louis from Connecticut.
Louis, I need you to speak directly into your telephone.
Kevin?
Yeah. Speak directly into your telephone and speak up for us.
You can hear me good?
Got you.
Okay. Good evening, Freighter.
Greetings, sir.
Yeah, Freighter, there could be, when somebody says God, They could be talking about somebody else. They could be talking about the great architect, you know. And like, all you got to do, look at any public building. Like, I live in Connecticut here. I can look at Yale University. Just look at the architecture.
Louis, you're going to have to speak up. We're barely getting you.
Look at architecture of any public building, and you will see gargoyles. And I believe it's all this Gnosticism is Lucifer. Like the deity star.
You think that Gnosticism is from Lucifer?
You had the great star, yes. Osiris. You can cut, like, when somebody say God, doesn't really mean what God is really talking about, like the God I believe in.
Well, yeah, but see, when you use the word God, it has one concept to Jews. Another concept closely aligned, but a little different, to Christians, And even within Christianity, there are many, many different definitions of this term God. It's very different in Catholicism than it is in Protestantism. And then within Protestantism, it breaks down into smaller microscopic definitions. And all of that's different from what is meant in the Muslim religion when they say God. It's not, the definitions are all different.
All right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it all comes down to Lucifer.
Well, in Isaiah 14:10, if you look at the proper translation of that, that deals with the morning star, that is Venus, that is coming up before the sun. Also, the greatest Lucifer tale is the one in Revelation. And that, with the dragon, that's interesting right there, because in all ancient mythology, real ancient mythology like Sumerian, there's always a battle against a dragon. And usually what occurs after that battle is the whole world is created. It's usually, the original name of the dragon was known as Tiamat. And then the original battle of Jesus and Satan, that had to deal with like Horus and Set. It was very, very identical to each other.
Whoops. I was trying to bring Terry back on the line, and I accidentally cut him off. Terry, I apologize for that. The telephone number is 480-553-7252. 480-553-7252. And what do you folks think about this now? I mean, really put your thinking caps on and think about this, because if reality is reality and what we create is the responses and consequences that flow to us from that reality, if that's the case, and I think it is, maybe you don't, maybe you think that we do create entirely our reality. I don't. I think if you step onto a track with a train that's really coming, and you really believe that it's not coming, you really will be dead. Because I think reality is reality. But taking that example, we need to know what is real so that we can make the proper responses and get positive consequences. And in that sense, we create our experience with reality. So what do you think about, do the spirits actually exist? Now, Nigel, over in the UK, says these things are just as real as you and me. Terry said they're real. But he felt that all of this Gnostic information is Luciferian. And an interesting thing about that term Luciferian, Lucifer means, the actual meaning of it is light bearer. The actual meaning of the word Lucifer means the bearer of light, or the enlightener.
Actually,
all right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did you ever hear the story of Bishop Lucifer? There was a Nicene council about Arianism,
mm-hmm.
and there was an actual Bishop Lucifer, and he was highly vocal against the Orthodox way of things and how they were arguing against the Arians. And
right, we have to take a break. We'll get to that when we come back. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Sure thing.
All right, you hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Freighter, I want to hear the story about Bishop Lucifer, but let's take this call first, and then we'll get into that story. Caller, if you're still with us, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was kind of going a little bit off of where the callers were directed to as far as some of their questions and some of their thoughts. I had two questions for the guest and one question for you, Kevin.
All right, go ahead.
I'll start with you. How's your health? I've been worried a little bit sickly about it.
My health sucks.
It really does, huh?
Yes. I'm at this point on final approach, I think.
For death?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you tell me just a little bit more on the analysis, and I won't bother you on it, because a lot of us are really, we actually really love you as far as not more than just a talk show host, but as a person.
Well, I appreciate that. It's what I put in the K-Files E-Zine. It's just out of control situation with the blood pressure and the heart, and you know. But look, hey, that's the one thing you were born with that was a guarantee. Is it's over.
I want to present one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there's a lot of AM radio shows with communication going on nowadays that have a lot of things to say that the mass media never tell people, and they're growing and they're getting big and people are communicating. But I want to tell you something. 6 or 7 years before I started listening to them, there was a man that opened up my mind to realize that there's a lot going on in this world, and basically taught me how to think as far as being logical and looking at things in an evidence court-like sense, to where you're not brainwashed by all the crap around you and you can just look at it and believe in a doorknob if it exists.
That's right. You're right. You don't have to have any faith when it comes to doorknobs. They either exist or they don't.
And I guess I'll just move on to the guest.
Yeah.
My first question is, when it comes to, they were talking about dark entities before, as far as different things that can show up. I happen to know from the stories with UFOs and different aliens that something's going on, and a lot of times they can communicate telepathic-wise. And if you start speaking about telepathy and speaking to the people that think they're talking telepathy, you start hearing about people with tinfoil on their heads and start hearing stories as far as just crazy people. However, I wanted to suggest your thoughts on the fact that perhaps, because I've seen people heal with their hands, I've seen different things as far as truth, as far as there being light, whether or not Jerry Wills projected it through his hands when he healed that cancer patient in the news report, which started him in a very big way, which I believe he did have. But I believe there's a force of light. And when people talk about there being dark demons and they say, think good thoughts, I believe there's more. We've listened to the Alien Hunter. He says, don't take very much crap from people that are trying to hurt you. And I think as far as the psyche goes, if you can project any kind of light, you can meditate, you could possibly study under gurus, but surely enough, if you picture an atomic explosion going off of good light, and you try to funnel, which I've learned in Wicca and different other languages, I'm not great at or anything like that, but as far as the concept, these kind of things do work. If you can funnel a mass amount of light, and you can just picture it bursting straight at the thing that's attacking you, I want to tell everybody out there that whether it's terrestrial and something being induced to you, or extraterrestrial, or anything doing with mental telepathy, I believe, and I don't know how, but I believe that in the future people will be able to develop skills for those kind of mind readers and those kind of telepathy users, and any kind of dark spirits that pray and communicate with you in any way. I haven't had a lot of experience with myself, but I just want to hear your thoughts on the human psyche developing in the future and people possibly taking courses to learn how to neutralize forces around them when we expand 100 to 200 years from now, and we learn that all the other civilizations out there that are beyond us use these kind of capabilities. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. What do you think about that, Frater?
Well, it's interesting. The first thing I thought of when he mentioned about a nuclear explosion of positive energy, I thought of I can't remember the name of it, but there was a group of guys who created this computer that, what's it called, Fried the Grid or something like that? But that the idea was is to get as many people as possible to think nothing but positive thoughts, and they would get spikes. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, and it does prove that his point, that there is something there. I mean, the whole idea, there's this whole other realm of consciousness, and we can change this, you know. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be negative.
Is it something people can learn, as he was talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is something you can learn, you know, but the first things you have to always get over is guilt and issues like that, but that takes a long time for some people, you know. It's just that when you grow up, sometimes you're around a guilt-ridden society, so you have to kind of retrain yourself to, you know, become more positive and be optimistic.
All right, so does your book do that? Does your book train people to develop the ability to focus their mind this way?
Oh, yes. It takes them step by step. Deals with anything you can imagine. Anything, even the morphemines, you know, like pleasure centers, like basically how it even goes to the point of talking about how basically people who say they like get addicted to cigarettes is because they're spiking their dimorphamines. And in life, a lot of times, you know, we'll just finish that real quick, is dimorphamines really rule us. You know, we can get addicted to things. And if we can eliminate it step by step, like for this book, you can eliminate all these little things, you come so much better.
All right. Now, before that call, you had started to tell us about Bishop Lucifer.
Oh, yes.
And let me bring everyone up to date on were mentioning the Arians, the Arius controversy. The mm-hmm. biggest actual war with people fighting, the biggest actual war between Christian factions over theology was fought between Athanasius and Arius.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you're referring to. They actually were trying to kill each other, and they actually had people out fighting over theology.
Oh, yeah.
Just wonderful stuff. Okay, tell us about Bishop Lucifer.
Well, basically what happened is they were so outraged by him, and Constantine wasn't used to all these bishops being so independent, you know. It's the old Roman Empire. You know, everyone does as they're told. No one just freely starts fighting. But what happened was, you know, this Bishop Lucifer became too vocal, they exiled him from Rome. You know, Rome is, what is Rome? The city of God. And when they exiled him, eventually when Emperor Julian came in, he allowed them all back because he wanted to destroy Christianity. And so Bishop Lucifer came back and started to continue what he was doing, and then eventually he just got outright banned again. But that was the thing, he came so close to them wanting to kill him.
Well, Jewish history, Christian history, and Muslim history are all replete with holy men declaring death upon others.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going on in some cases.
Oh, it
is. In some cases. I don't know about the Christians and the Jews, but within the ranks of Islam, there are death fatwas pronounced by holy men, imams. Yeah. Yeah, but this word Lucifer actually means, whether people believe this or don't believe it, it makes no difference. It actually means light bearer, enlightenment. And, of course, they identify the reptile in the Genesis story of creation. They say that's Lucifer tempting Eve. The interesting thing there is he said I don't identify that as Lucifer, but a lot of theologians do. But this reptile says to Eve, if you eat off of that tree, you guys will become gods. And there are people who would say, well, that's a lie. Well, not exactly, because after they ate off of that tree in Genesis, it specifically says the reason they got kicked out of the garden was because they had become gods.
Yeah.
And so and anybody that doubts that, just go look it up. Doesn't matter whether you believe me or not. I didn't write Genesis. I didn't make it up. That's what it says. It comes right out and says that. Now the man has become one of us.
And that's the thing you always notice. You notice there's always a first creation and a second creation. Well, first, Elohim make all the things around us, but then they make us.
No, that isn't what Genesis said.
Well,
Genesis, the Elohim make a race, and that race does not get the so-called breath of life, which is a genetic transfer, but they make a race, and then it's not the Elohim that made Adam. It is the Lord Elohim, the boss Elohim, the king of the Elohim makes Adam.
Okay.
And Adam gets a transfer of genetic material from him that is passed on to Eve. It's called the breath of life. And only Adam is ever, it's the only person who is ever said to have gotten the breath of life is Adam. However, Eve is spoken of as having it. And then her descendants are spoken, us, we're spoken of as having it. Therefore, it has to be genetic because she is 100% genetically engineered from Adam's tissue. So whatever it is, whatever that breath of life is genetic. But you had two separate human races.
See, what's interesting, my theory about the Nephilim is that when they were trying to make the perfect human, they were going through this whole process, that basically there was like a missing link when they were making us. They were going for the evolution process, but then they decided to give us the same powers as them. And then as the this being would have obviously had the same abilities to go through dimensions, just like them, and so it would have been very hard to train them to do as they said. And I believe that this may very well be an option to what is known as the Bigfoot. That this Bigfoot has been known to disappear. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, just vanish right out of sight.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what. We have to take a break. We will come back after this break in just a couple of minutes, and we will be on Final Approach. The telephone line is still open if you have the courage to call. We'll be back. We are back, and my guest this evening, Frater S.H., he is the author of the Gnosis Gate book. It is a book that reveals a lot of the information and principles and ideas of the mystery societies, and he says that it brings insight and will be helpful to people who know it. Frater, I had to cut you off, and the mic is yours. I want you to finish your thought.
Okay, what was that about the Bigfoot and stuff? Okay.
Yeah.
yeah, basically the Bigfoot has always been known to vanish into thin air. I mean, I remember on what was it, Discovery, they were hunting this one Bigfoot down, and they actually could see something from the distance, and all of a sudden it just vanished in the thin air. And it is a possibility, because the Nephilim were described as giants, that, you know, and it's that's another thing to lead on to, is that the longevity of the human race, you know, and notice how our lifespan is kind of, you know, I mean, like, for example, Noah, he could live over 900 years old, I think, because he had some of that leftover Elohim blood, and that makes us live longer. But after the flood, something changed. Just that got watered down, I think.
Two times it says that the boss God adjusted our DNA and lowered our lifespan. The first time And this is in the Hebrew Scriptures. The first time it was lowered to 120 years. The second time it was lowered to 70 years. So there have been DNA adjustments made to us, at least according to the Jewish or Hebrew Scriptures, that turned down our lifespan.
Yeah. Because we were just supposed to be workers, so they didn't want us to have that same lifespan, I guess.
Well, there are geneticists now who say they have discovered the gene that controls aging. Now, that doesn't mean they know how to do anything with it yet, but they have discovered a gene that controls aging. Yes. Now, if they do discover how to do something with that, they may be able to turn up our lifespan once again.
Yeah. That would be interesting to be able to live that many years. I mean, you might be living here for about 100 years, and all of a sudden you're colonizing space. I mean, imagine your memories, you know.
Well, you know, I don't think it would be a bad thing to be able to live 100 or 200 years,
yeah,
as long as you could live it in relative health. Now, it does pose some real problems. I mean, once you turn that gene on and you make it possible for people to live 200 years,
mm-hmm,
you know, you're going to have to really look at some things like Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to look at resources. I mean, one of the big problems on this planet right now is that the population is using resources faster than those resources are being replenished.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in other words, another way to say that is enough of us are not dying fast enough.
Yeah.
And so once you turn that gene on and increase lifespan to 100 or 200 years, you really are going to have to be looking at, you know, you're going to have to colonize space. You're going to have to move out to other planets, if for no other reason, to mine those planets for resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, it wouldn't surprise me if we did find that and we knew how to unlock it. They would classify that, probably, with the fear, you know, because right now, you know, they don't want, with the whole fear of overpopulation, you know, unless we could go out there, but not yet.
Well, we may already have that knowledge, and it may already be classified.
Yeah.
You know, the true state of our scientific achievement, by some estimates from people on the inside, is 200 years ahead of what you and I see out in the world today.
Yeah.
So, you know, the statement that is out there for public consumption is that scientific development is 40 years ahead. And but there are people who are very much on the inside who say it's 200 years ahead. So, you know, they may actually have the ability already to turn that gene on and to generate, you know, a 200-year lifespan. You know, there are other things, you know, with that human genome that if they really know what they're doing with that, they can manipulate it so that we become somewhat impervious to the damages that can be caused by radiation out in space. And, you know, it's then once you do that, colonization of the planets is on, you know.
Oh yeah. But
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I definitely think though the first thing is that we would all have to learn how to make personal contact with these aliens, because you know they may not trust us at first, but you know.
I don't trust us.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, you know, one of the things that's happening right now. We've had people on this show, guests on this show, who have said that, and these are people who are very much insiders in science and space, And they have said that we are mining the moon now, that we have bases there, and we are mining the moon now. Now, as I have said before, I don't know. I haven't been to the moon. But we've had some real scientific insiders who have said that's the case.
Yeah, there's people, you know, they claim that the surface of the moon, there's always something going on, you know. I don't know. I never studied that, but, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, too, if there's something up there, you know.
Well, now, you see, of course, they know there's H3 there. And that is very, very necessary in order to do cold fusion energy reactions. And so they say they're mining that already. And now, this week, NASA released information that their latest probe, no, it wasn't the NASA probe, it was the, I think it was a European probe. I could be wrong. Anyway, NASA released the information that uranium has been found on the moon. All right, now you've got us, the Russians, the Japanese, already with satellites around the moon.
Oh, yeah.
The Chinese are coming. The Indians are coming. Everyone else that can build a rocket says they're going to the moon. What do you reckon that's about? Well, so they can say they're the first ones there? Nope, that's already been done. It has to be for resources, and the reason I said I don't even trust us is, what do you think will happen? Do you really think that this space treaty that all these nations signed at the UN will actually keep all of these nations from going to war over the resources that are on the moon? I don't think so. Yeah. I don't trust us. I think we are a warlike, barbaric race.
And that's the thing, is I wonder if the Elohim would let us go all that way to, you know, be fighting it out in space. I wonder. I wonder if that would be kind of like the final straw.
Well, if they don't put a stop to it, I don't see anything that's going to put a stop to the warlike nature of nations.
I'm afraid so.
And once everyone has a car to get to the moon, they're going to there will inevitably be conflicts over the resources that are on the moon. Hey, I want to thank you for being with us. It's been great. It's been interesting. It's been different from what we normally do. If you will, Freighter, just stay on the line with me for a moment. I want to talk with you after we close the show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Freighter S.H., author of the Gnosis Gate book. Check it out. It's at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.